This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. The White House is voicing strong support for Iranian protesters who took to the streets to decry the shootdown of a Ukrainian commercial jetliner outside Tehran last week. VOA's Michael Bowman reports the Trump administration faces continued bipartisan pressure from Congress to provide more details on the intelligence that prompted the U.S.'s targeted killing of an Iranian general as Democrats seek to rein in the president's ability to unilaterally order military action against Iran.
U.S. President Donald Trump weighed in Sunday, tweeting, quote, "To the leaders of Iran, do not kill your protesters. Thousands have already been killed or imprisoned by you, and the world is watching. More importantly, the USA is watching."
This has not been a good week for the Iranian regime, that's for sure.
National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien told ABC's This Week the administration doesn't want war, but will continue pressuring for change in Iran. Michael Bowman, VOA News, Washington.
And meanwhile, more than 1,000 people attended a rally in Hong Kong Sunday to urge people and governments abroad to support the city's pro-democracy movement. Speakers also celebrated the results of Saturday's presidential election in Taiwan.
The Taiwanese demonstrated how peaceful it could be if we have a democracy. And we have to understand that the Taiwanese fought hard in previous decades so that they can have this power today. So if we want to have democracy like them, we need to fight hard and to continue our fight with the Communist Party until we can have our five demands met.
Under the framework of one country, two systems, the city enjoys greater democratic rights than those on the mainland. But protesters say those freedoms have been steadily eroding. This is VOA News. A small volcano near the Philippines erupted Sunday, forcing the closure of Manila's international airport and prompted the evacuation of tens of thousands of people. The Australian government announced that it has allocated an initial $50 million for the bushfire wildlife relief efforts.
And there's a lot of raw emotion out there, and that's why I say there are scars on our landscape and there are scars on our people and scars you won't see. And the rebuilding effort is just not rebuilding the infrastructure, it's just not rebuilding the towns and the homes. It's rebuilding communities, and to do that, you've got to help people restore as well. And no one's immune from that. None of us are.
Officials fear that 30% of just one koala colony on the country's northeast coast, or between 4,500 and 8,400, have been lost in the recent fires. Authorities have no exact figure on how many native animals in total have been killed, but experts say it's likely to be in the millions. Since September, at least 28 people have died in Australia's bushfires. Kenneth Roth, Human Rights Watch's executive director, was barred from entering Hong Kong Sunday. He was planning to launch the organization's annual world report in Hong Kong this week.
So I'm going to return to New York. I'll hold the press conference there. But sadly, this episode is just the latest evidence that the Chinese government is doing everything it can to undermine the enforcement of international human rights standards.
The report is expected to be very critical of China. Disgraced movie mogul Harvey Weinstein's sex abuse trial is set to resume on Monday with more pre-screening of potential jurors. AP correspondent Julie Walker.
Challenges and distractions have stymied the Weinstein jury selection. Protests outside the courthouse were so loud you could hear the commotion in the 15th floor courtroom. Hundreds of New Yorkers were summoned for jury duty, with most dismissed when they raised their hands to indicate they couldn't keep an open mind about Weinstein, who's pleaded not guilty to charges he raped a woman in a Manhattan hotel room in 2013 and sexually assaulted another woman in 2006. If convicted at a trial expected to last into March, the 67-year-old could face life in prison. Julie Walker, New York.
A crippling French transport strike entered its 39th day Sunday over government pension reform. The strike continued despite the government's offer to withdraw the most contested measure of that plan. The French government says it will drop plans to increase the official retirement age to 64 from 62 in an effort to end the strike, which paralyzed Paris and its suburbs. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botte in Washington. Today is Monday, January 13th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Ethiopia's prime minister proposes parliamentary elections sometime in May or June this year.
We want the election to be held according to the Constitution. We are all getting ready for it. But there are a few problems regarding the security of the country at some areas.
Bekele Naga is the Secretary General of the Oromo Federalist Congress. Swaziland opposition parties appeal once more to King Mswati III to democratize the country. Zambian public media houses are told not to carry media statements from Zambian embassies abroad unless cleared with the Foreign Affairs Ministry. And former Gambian leader Yahya Jammeh vows to return home from exile.
By the grace of the Almighty Allah, I'm coming back. Drove me out of the Gambia. Allah. Apart from the Almighty Allah, nobody can take me out of the Gambia.
The leader of anti-government protests in Liberia says government prevented him from leaving the country. A Chinese foreign minister visits Zimbabwe. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. An official of Ethiopia's Oromo Federalist Congress says the opposition is ready to participate in parliamentary elections in line with the constitution. But Bekele Naga, Secretary General of the Congress, says the opposition is concerned about insecurity in some parts of the country. He was reacting to Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed's announcement over the weekend that Ethiopia will hold parliamentary elections in May or June this year. Speaking in South Africa, the Prime Minister said the National Electoral Commission will make the announcement. Naga says there may be a delay in places like the Oromo region and also because of lack of enough time for preparation.
As an opposition party from the Oromo Federalist Congress, we want the election to be held according to the Constitution. We are all getting ready for it. But there are a few problems regarding the security of the country at some areas. So it would be a bit difficult for those areas to hold election.
You said there are some areas where there's violence. What is causing the violence?
Some areas, especially in Oromo regions of Guji and Wolega zones, there is fighting going on at this moment. The cause of it is some rebels fighting there, Oromo rebels, and it ought to be solved peacefully and through dialogue and negotiation. It didn't happen. So the fighting is going to be a problem for the election.
According to the Constitution, when is the election supposed to be held, this parliamentary election?
Well, according to the Constitution, it is, I think, around June, if I'm not mistaken. We are now 4 or 5 months left for the election. I don't think the necessary preparations have already been completed. I cannot say fully that this election is going to be held at a proper and a constitutional time within the framework of that given time because of the shortage of the time. It's only expectation. I expect that it might be extended.
But you say that the opposition would like for the election to take place.
We want the election to be held, and the time, the preparation for the election, I think, will be a bit short.
If there were no violence, would the opposition be ready to take part in the election?
You know, a new electoral law has been passed. This law puts some pre-election conditions. For example, there are a party, national party, should have a signature of 10,000 members of the party. So to take these 10,000 members, it might take a bit of time. And the other is, if we are going to hold that election, a new party has to call for a general assembly of its members. That one is also a new version of the law. So there are this law mandatory sections. So we are going to fulfill that in about 2 months. After that, the candidates are obliged to also get signature of from 2,000 to 1,500 supporters. This takes a bit time and financial constraints. So there are such problems before the election.
Bekele Nega is the Secretary General of the Oromo Federalist Congress. He was speaking with us from the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. Former Gambian President Yahya Jammeh has announced his intention to return to the Gambia 3 years after he was forced to flee the country into exile in Equatorial Guinea. In a New Year's message to his supporters over the weekend, Jammeh said no one can stop him from returning to his native country. Pandero Umbai reports from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Jammeh left the Gambia for Equatorial Guinea in January of 2017 after losing the 2016 elections. This followed the intervention of the African bloc, ECOWAS, the African Union, and the United Nations, who asked Jammeh to temporarily leave the country and allow the formation of a peaceful transitional government. Over the weekend, Jammeh phoned his supporters to discuss his home return, the expulsion of 5 APRC members from the party, and a protest march scheduled for this week, which would demand for his return to the country.
When I was leaving the country, mm-hmm. I made it very clear how long I'm going to go on leave.
Exactly.
I'm on leave. Let me also make it very clear.
Yes, sir.
It's only the Almighty Allah that can say only Jammeh's dead body can come back to the Gambia.
That's true, sir.
Okay?
Yes, sir.
Jammeh has been accused of committing widespread human rights violations during his 22-year rule. Top on the allegations include enforced disappearances, rape, murder, and the torture of political opponents. Jammeh insists that nothing can prevent him from returning to the Gambia.
But by the grace of the Almighty Allah, I'm coming back. And if people say that they drove me out of the Gambia, Allah Akbar. Apart from the Almighty Allah, nobody can take me out of the Gambia.
Gambian political analyst Pa Samba Jau believes that Jammeh is homesick. He warns that Jammeh's crimes cannot go unpunished.
The mere fact that he's there asking people to protest on his behalf so that he can come back contradicts every statement that he made about nobody can stop him from coming. Jammeh is a criminal and does not have any rights as a free man. And if Jammeh should come to that country, he should and must be arrested.
A joint statement that was issued in January of 2017 states that ECOWAS, the AU, and the UN would be working with the Gambian government to ensure that Jammeh was at liberty to return to the Gambia at any time he wanted. Jammeh did not stop at announcing his home return. He also took a swipe at Gambia's Truth, Reconciliation and Reparations Commission. He says much has been said about the TRRC's Never Again campaign, and yet people are dying in large numbers due to lack of medication.
Now, even pregnant women whose husbands can afford it have to go to Senegal to have a safe delivery.
That's correct.
Now, it used to be safer to go to the hospital for delivery. Now, going to the hospitals, any hospital apart from private hospital, is a death sentence.
Jammeh maintains that the Gambia was more peaceful and stable during his rule compared to Barrow's government.
This is what happens. A country of insults, human sacrifice, people dying like frogs. When I was there, even frogs were safe.
Meanwhile, the government spokesperson, Ibrahim Aji Sankare, said President Barrow was not aware of any agreement that was signed between Jammeh and the Gambian government for his home return. He was speaking in an interview with the BBC. This is pandering by reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Today's Monday, January 13th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time, 14 minutes past the hour. The leader of anti-government protest in Liberia, Henry Costa, says the Liberian government stopped him from leaving the country. Costa, one of the founders of the Council of Patriots, organizers of the protest, which has been calling on President George Weah to step down for lack of good leadership, says the immigration wanted to seize his passport.
After the Minister of Justice had confirmed to me that, yes, I was going to be put through a rigorous investigation to explain how I obtained the travel document that I was able to enter the country on December 19, I figure it would be ill-advised for me to continue to try to make the process flight out of. So then I deplaned. I asked the airline to take my bags off, and I decided not to give them my passport. They wanted me to present them my passport so they could seize it. I said no.
The allegation here is that you travel on forged documents. Did you travel with a passport, laissez passer? Was it obtained legally?
I travel on a laissez passer which they accepted, and I've been here 3 weeks. And never once did they contact me to say my document was forged. Never once did they tell me in my 3 weeks in the country that they had concerns about the authenticity of the document that I entered the country with on December 19th. Now, how is it that on January 10th, 3 weeks later, I am now told that I traveled into the country on a forged document, but they said it was too busy, or they figured I was too busy to call me in for investigation. I traveled with a passport, and I have traveled with a letter passport before, and it's not been this way, sir. This is the first time because, of course, the government is trying to harass me.
I follow the social media, and some people are raising the question, why do you want to leave Liberia when following the protest, some people who protested with you are in jail?
That is not correct. Every single person who protested with us, they are out of jail, except one, the driver of Yekep Koluba, whose bail we are still working on. The government has told every insurance company not to grant bail, and so we are working on that. All the other people are released. I'm a free citizen. I should have the right to move anytime I want to move. That is the law.
The allegation is that you should stay with the people so that you continue the movement, but they feel that because you have this free will to move, you are not fully committed.
Mr. Bote, whoever is saying that is not one of my supporters. My supporters knew how long I was on the airport. They knew I took a break from school. They know I have to go back to school. So, Mr. Bote, you are basically asking me or raising a concern with me that is coming from the ruling party of peace. The ruling party of violators of our rights and our laws. That is that question they're asking.
Henry Costa is one of the founders of the Council of Patriots, organizers of anti-government protests in Liberia. He was speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. All attempts to get the Liberian government to respond to the allegations were fruitless. Zambia's permanent Secretary of Information and Broadcasting says he did not ban the public media from carrying media statements issued by Zambian embassies abroad. But in a letter to the heads of Zambia's main public media, Amos Malupenga says the public should not use or publish media statements from Zambian embassies and High Commission unless such statements are approved by the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. Malupenga says his directive was a mere administrative and procedural issue, and he is surprised that he has raised so much misunderstanding.
You are aware that all officers in the missions serving abroad report to Ministry of Foreign Affairs. So those are their direct supervisors. So on a day-to-day basis, in terms of operations, reporting, and all that, they feed into Foreign Affairs, and then Foreign Affairs would connect with the relevant authorities. So the instruction we conveyed on behalf of Minister of Foreign Affairs was to the extent that no media statement should be aired or published without being cleared first by Minister of Foreign Affairs. Meaning, if press attachés in the various missions or high commissioners or ambassadors have something to report to the Zambian people through the media, they first have to submit that as a matter of administrative procedure. Once the Minister of Foreign Affairs gives the go-ahead, and then they proceed and have that aired. So to say there is ban on them issuing statements, it's not even an exaggeration. It is merely a publication.
If they have to clear their statements with the Foreign Affairs, I'm sure also that each embassy has its own press attaché. Why have a press attaché at the embassy, and why have an ambassador?
Of course, the press attaché will help the ambassador to prepare the statement in a journalistic manner. The ambassador may not be a journalist. So the press attachés are in foreign nations not only to prepare statements. There are a lot of duties that are assigned to press attachés serving abroad. So their role is not to issue statements alone. And that is why we are saying this is merely a reminder. It's not a new rule. But, you know, when people start bypassing some rules, then they will cause confusion.
If this directive is coming from the Foreign Affairs Ministry, then the people might think, oh, isn't this too restrictive on the part of the Foreign Affairs Ministry, of the ambassadors or of the people in the Foreign Service?
No. I think people are trying to overblow a very simple and straightforward matter. Firstly, Zambia has got foreign policy. It's guided by its foreign policy. And that foreign policy is managed or directed by Ministry of Foreign Affairs, meaning all the ambassadors and high commissioners and all officers who are serving in missions abroad, they are representing Zambia in those various countries. And whatever they say, whatever they do, has to be consistent with our foreign policy as Zambia. So the reason as to why they have to report to Minister of Foreign Affairs first before they interact with anyone, if they have to interact with the public. It's to ensure that there is consistency in foreign policy.
Amos Malupenga is Zambia's Permanent Secretary of Information and Broadcasting. He was speaking with us from the capital, Lusaka. The Political Parties Assembly, PPA, a coalition of four political parties in Eswatini, formerly Swaziland, has submitted a letter to King Mswati III calling for dialogue in the governance of the kingdom from an absolute or monarchical democracy to a constitutional monarchy. The group accused the king of always portraying Eswatini abroad as a peaceful country that resolved political differences through dialogue, while at the same time never engaging political parties for dialogue. They call on the king to embrace change by allowing the citizens to elect their own government.
He's been talking about dialogue wherever he goes out of the country, but he's never talked even once to any political party within the country.
Why do you suppose the king is not talking to political parties?
You should remember that the king is not a constitutional monarch. He's an executive monarch. He rules the country. So political parties have got no space within his government. Political parties are considered as dissenting voices, which should not be listened. That's why we've been writing letters to him, asking to talk to him about introduction of constitutional monarchy, multi-party democracy.
As you said, the king, when he goes out of the country, he talks about dialogue. So what do you suppose the international community, do you think they don't know what's happening in Swaziland?
Yeah, most international community are very ignorant about the modus operandi in terms of governance in Swaziland. So they take his side of the story. It's only recently where we came together as political parties, where we are starting to relate our own narrative versus what he tells the world. But also, he has the money to go out to the world and tell it. Then the political parties, because they don't have any local standing or no identity, because they are not even registered, they can't go out to the world.
I'm looking at this, the language here. It says here that for that reason, any political conflict that might erupt thereafter, the king will be held accountable. We have seen powerful world leaders appearing in the International Criminal Court for crimes against humanity after their countries experienced civil wars, and most instances, it started through refusal to give power to the people. Are you suggesting the possibility of this happening in Swaziland?
Highly possible, because we've declared that we are non-violent and we're not going to use any militant approach towards achieving the multi-party democracy within the country. But we've seen his government going out buying guns, a lot of guns. Where are you going to use those guns? So those guns are not going to be for protecting our boundaries, but they're going to be for fighting his own citizens.
Mbogisini Shangundu is a member of PUDEMO. He was speaking with us from the Swaziland capital, Mbabane. Chinese Foreign Affairs Minister Wang Yi is in Zimbabwe on a three-day business visit in a nation where Chinese companies and government have invested huge sums of money in various sectors.
It is a very commendable gesture that has been shown by China, but the President Xi Jinping has decided to send such a high-profile personality to come and, number one, follow up on the mega deals that Zimbabwe and China embarked on. Secondly, strengthen the diplomatic relations between these countries. Number three, strengthen the trade and related issues between Zimbabwe and China.
Zimbabwe has been talking about mega deals with China, and this includes a $1.1 billion Wange 7 and 8 expansion project. A new parliament, and then included in this is the $153 million Robert Mugabe International Airport facelift. But, you know, some of these deals, do they serve any purpose? Are they benefiting the local people?
To tell the truth, personally, I'm impressed with the priority areas that you've just mentioned. They indeed serve the people, because if we look at the power station, it is integral that it be a priority area, because we know that the economy here in Zimbabwe is based particularly on the efficiency of power system and supply.
Digumuzi Puti is a ZANU-PF member of parliament. He spoke with Gibbs Dube of Your Zimbabwe Service. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. Very, very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin the sports in Ghana, where a football fan is in critical condition after he was hit by a warning shot fired by the police at the Baba Yara Stadium in Ghana on Sunday. The incident happened after Asante Kotoko's 1-0 defeat against Berekum Chelsea in the Ghana Premier League. The chairman of the Kotoko FC Supporters Union, Nana Kwame Dankwa, has called for a swift investigation into the circumstances that led to the shooting of their supporter in the Premier League game between the club and Berekum Chelsea.
It's unfortunate, for a supporter to decide to come and watch a club's match and ended up in this situation. So we are not happy about it. The police, they need to investigate and come out for people to have confidence in them. We believe that they are there to protect lives and properties, but they are not there to, kill us. We are Ghanaian nationals, and we expect them to protect all of us.
And now to the CAF Champions League, where former champions TP Mazembe and Mamelodi Sundowns became the first sides to reach the 2019-2020 Total CAF Champions League quarterfinals after match day 4 of the mini-league stage was concluded last week. And DR Congo Giants TP Mazembe came back from behind to defeat Angolan visitors Primeiro de Agosto 2-1 and raise their Group A tally to 10 points to guarantee one of the top spots and plays in the knockout stages. An identical result for Mamelodi Sundowns of South Africa in Pretoria against USM Alger meant the South Africans will play in the quarterfinals yet again after topping Group C with 10 points too. In Cairo, another five-time champions and Egyptian Giants Zamalek moved closer to qualification themselves with a 2-0 win over Zambia's Zesco United. Tunisian Giants Etoile du Sahel made amends for their day 3 home 1-0 defeat to Sudan's Al Hilal, beating them in the reverse fixture in Omdurman 2-1. In Bulawayo, record champions and Egypt's Giant Al Ahly salvaged a point from Zimbabwe's Platinum with a disappointing 1-1 draw. While in Luanda, Angola's Petro de Luanda were held at home by last season's losing finalist Wydad Casablanca of Morocco. Holders, Osporans of Tunisia, are also on the brink of yet another knockout stages plays after a crucial away 2-0 victory over DR Congo's AS Vita in Kinshasa. In athletics news, Kenya's Aronex Kipruto set a new 10-kilometer road world record as compatriot Sheila Chipkuri won the women's race at the 10-kilometer Valencia race in Spain on Sunday. World 10,000 meters bronze medalist Aronex Kipruto clocked 26 minutes 24 seconds to shave 14 seconds off the yet-to-be-ratified mark set by Uganda's Joshua Cheptegei. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. And that is it for this Monday, January 13th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson Omale, along with our engineer Jamie Cook, I'm James Barter, wishing you a very good day.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, slavery, racism, and colonialism fueled the emergence of Pan-Africanism. Reflections on the significance of Pan-Africanism on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
The 62nd Annual Grammy Awards Show is coming up. To celebrate, Border Crossings will play songs from the winners of the 2019 American Music Awards to refresh you on some of last year's best tracks. Tune in to hear from your favorite artists like Post Malone, BTS, and Taylor Swift, January 23rd on The Voice of America.